Welcome to Women in B2B Marketing, a show where CMOs, VPs of marketing, and all strong women leaders in B2B discuss their top tactics, strategies, and tips for building high-performing teams, leveraging trends, and ultimately rocking their marketing careers. Made by and for women, insightful for all. I'm your host and 15-year B2B marketer, Jane Serra. Let's dive in. Okay. Thank you everyone for joining for another episode of Women in B2B Marketing. I'm super excited for today's guest and her story. I have with us Alice Koh, who is CPA, CA, former head of marketing, certified leadership and team coach at Reframed Coaching. And she has 18 plus years of experience working in business, finance, and marketing. And we're going to dive into all of it, everyone. So welcome to the show, Alice.
Hi, Jane. So excited to be here and chat with you.
Thank you. I'm so excited to hear about your journey through all of these career paths and how you made the pivots throughout each. So my first big question always is, how did you get into B2B marketing and now for you, and then into coaching after that?
Okay. I learned this term recently. It's called squiggly career. Have you heard of that before?
I have not, but I love it.
Me too. So it's a term coined by two women who wrote a book, and I think they also have a podcast on it. So my career has been squiggly. It is not a straight path into B2B marketing. It was like a path with lots of distractions and twists and turns, and then back on the path. So in college, I was in business school, and I thought that studying business was practical, and I was wooed by Big Four consulting firms that came to our college to recruit students. And I was lucky, and I got an internship at KPMG, which eventually led to a full-time role. Because the firm paid for all their students to get designated, I became a designated chartered accountant. I'm a CPA, CA in Canada. But I knew that's not the path for me. I knew that pretty quickly after learning what auditing was. Again, circumstances were in my favor, and I was able to land my very first in-house job in New York City. So I moved all the way from the West Coast of Canada to the big city of New York, and I worked for two companies there. So the first company I worked at was a French liquor company called Remy Cointreau. It didn't drink, so probably wasn't the best culture fit. And after that, I moved over to work for the head office of Louis Vuitton.
Yep.
Every girl's, quote, dream job, right? Pretty fancy.
Yeah.
And I met some great people there. Honestly, the grind of repetitive work in accounting was not my jam. It really started to weigh on me. And I really wanted to change. I'd been in New York for about 3 years. And I landed this job back home in Canada at this fashion company called Aritzia. And they were about to launch e-commerce. At the time, believe it or not, they didn't have an e-commerce website.
Yeah.
And so I went back home, took this job, and I became a part of their e-commerce launch. And it was really interesting. And for the first time in a job, I got to experience things like how to launch a product, how to launch a service. I was involved in everything from fact-checking articles to being involved in operations. And then finally, we launched the e-commerce brand. And so I knew that maybe my heart's not really in accounting. But then came a really big turning point. I was still on the finance team, and we did this personality assessment called Clifton Strengths. And this is what really changed my life. This is an assessment that is rooted in data. There's actually science to support this use. And they've identified 34 different strengths that a person can naturally have. My report showed that my top strengths were vastly different than the other people on the accounting team. Very different. So my report literally laid out the fact that you're really good with people. You're really good at starting things from scratch. You're really good about thinking about the future. My report literally says, I still have it. You can see it. It says, you should work in startup and entrepreneurial environments. And that report, that report was enough for me to think, okay, I'm going to try something different. And so I decided to start marketing as a side gig, even though I had zero experience. I was really interested in helping startups use social media at the time. This was around 2012 when social media was becoming a big thing for business. I put myself out there. I networked like crazy.
Yeah.
And I managed to find 3 marketing clients. Okay, so all of a sudden I had a side hustle. So yeah. I still worked full time as an accountant and on the side and at night. I had 3 clients. One of my clients was a startup fashion B2C app. It was called Wandering. I helped them launch their blog. I helped them with event marketing. I helped them do influencer marketing. And I was just hooked from that point on. I was hooked onto startups and hooked onto marketing. And a year after doing that as my side hustle, I decided to take a leap of faith and I quit my cushy accounting job. It took a 70% pay cut and I decided to go find a full-time marketing job. And my first full-time marketing job was a company called Ballet BC. So it was the equivalent of what you would know as New York City Ballet or Miami City Ballet.
Yeah.
And it was a nonprofit. And I liken nonprofits to startups. They're very similar, actually, because nonprofits and startups, you have a lean team.
Yep.
You don't have many resources. You're always fundraising.
Yeah, it's true. And
there's no formal processes in place. So you just figure things out. And I was hired as the very first digital marketing manager. And I took on as much as I could. And I learned everything. Again, I networked. I tried things. Yeah. I experimented. And yeah, that was my very first marketing job. That was a 1-year contract. And I was lucky that after that, I started getting referred to basically any marketing contract or gig. So I took on marketing for chocolate companies, for nail polish brands, for event startups.
Wow.
People just, I was, again, really lucky. And I just kept getting all these referrals. And in order to take all these on, I decided to build like a mini niche marketing agency where I would bring in other marketing specialists and we would tackle certain marketing clients and marketing projects together. So that's how I started my marketing agency. And then this is how I got into B2B actually. I was referred to do a B2B SaaS startup marketing. And I remember thinking, okay, this is different because I've never marketed to a business before. Everything I'd done before was B2C. But something clicked because this client was in the fintech space, compliance space, and I had a CPA. So I realized that, I can actually understand some of these more complex topics and distill them into understandable, even creative, usable marketing pieces of content. And so after that, I actively only searched for B2B clients. So that's how I fell into B2B marketing. And
so interesting. You married your two worlds too at that point, right? Like your knowledge of finance and accounting, but also the fun of B2C and packaging those two together. Like how can you make fintech fun and approachable?
I love that, Jane. How to make fintech fun. That should be someone's personal brand. And in B2B, as some of the sales processes can be really long, and I really wanted to stay in a company long enough to see my results. So I decided to stop contracting and go into full-time work so I could honestly just have more of an impact and really see what, this is how the entire organization actually works. So that's how I fell into full-time marketing in fintech startups. So that's now you know how I got there.
Yeah. And then how this next leap in your career or pivot, however you want to call it, is you came into coaching. And I think when I was looking at your LinkedIn, it overlapped, right? You started coaching while you were full-time marketing. How did that work?
That's right. Actually, I had never thought about being a coach. There's a lot of people out there who have known for a while that they've always wanted to coach others. So it was an accident. Yeah. I was working full-time at a fintech startup. And this was right when the pandemic started. Everyone started working remotely. And I was leading a very creative marketing team, actually, but they were having a lot of trouble working remotely online together in a collaborative, cohesive way, let's just say. Yeah. There was a lot of misunderstanding. Things weren't getting done. Something wasn't working and engagement was going down. And I remember saying to my CMO, hey, I have this idea. I did this assessment like 10 years ago. And it really helped me build my motivation at work. Because we can teach everyone what their individual strengths are they can understand that their teammates are different from them. And she said, yeah, go for it. So I
quickly love that it stuck with you all those years and you came full circle.
Yes, okay, keep going. Actually, I forgot to mention, like after doing this assessment, I used it almost religiously. When I had my marketing agency, I made all my subcontractors do it too, just so we would understand how everyone was different and how we could work better together. Yeah.
I love that. Very cool.
Thanks. Yeah. I can't wait till you do it. So what happened was, so I just, okay, I'll create this mini workshop and I booked an hour with the team and I walked everybody through the framework. Everyone did their assessment. Everybody shared the results. And this is what I honestly didn't expect. I didn't really have high hopes. I just thought, okay, maybe this will work, increase morale. But something happened where all of a sudden everyone got really excited and they felt like they knew themselves better and they felt that like they knew their teammates better. So they just started clicking more. And then they started using the language in meetings and in work. So for example, there was one individual I managed. Her number one strength was activator. And the strength of activator means that you start things really quickly. Like before the meeting is even over, you're saying, well, what are the next steps? And she had always been frustrated that other team members did not work as fast as her. Now that she had this language to understand how she was different and unique, she was able to actually support her team members by saying, hey, I have the activator strength. If you need help starting a project because you're stuck, I'm happy to help you. Yeah, you could actually see the changes in people as individuals and how they work together. So I thought, oh, maybe I'm onto something. This is cool. So I started, I started offering this workshop to other departments in the same company, to sales, to customer success, to engineering, to product. And they all liked it. And so I thought, oh, cool. I'll just tell my other friends about it who worked at other startups. And then I started doing free workshops for teams at other startups. And again, this was all remote. And then what started happening was I started getting referrals from people I didn't know. And I thought, oh, yeah, maybe I'm onto something. Maybe this is something that people actually need in times like this. And honestly, they did. So I guess we're in marketing, so we understand the power of word to mouth. And I started getting inquiries and emails from people who I guess my friends had told them about what I was doing. And I remember going on a walk and I had this moment of breakthrough where I thought to myself, oh, my strengths report literally says that I'm really good at understanding people and developing people. Maybe I should look into this as a full-time thing. And I had gotten certified in the assessment, but I wanted to learn the actual ins and outs of coaching itself. That's when I went back to coaching school and ICF aligned so coaching school. And that's how Reframed Coaching came to be. And what I do now, it's pretty simple, actually. I help teams click. I help them work better together. And I support new managers in being better at their jobs with this tool of understanding how to work with people better.
I'd want to hear about coaching school.
Okay.
I'm also curious about if the Clifton Strengths Assessment ever mentioned being a coach, because that I'd be curious about. And then third, I'd love to dive into, I've taken not the Clifton Strengths Assessment before, although I will. I have taken other like a personality skill set assessments and different types that at companies, but they didn't do a great job of follow up with it. So like we all took this, we were like, oh, great, you're this, I'm this. And then that was the end of it. We never really did anything with it. So it didn't stick. Yeah. So I'm curious, I know I'm giving you a lot to talk through, but I'm curious how you battled that and make sure that people leverage this new knowledge that they have and that it becomes something like built into their everyday at work.
Love that question, Jane. Okay, let me work backwards from that.
Yes.
I'm all about creating sticky. We talk about this in marketing, right? Stickiness.
Yeah.
Like, how do you make something sticky? How do you create a product that people want to go into daily, weekly, and use? How do we get product adoption and engagement up?
Yes.
And I apply the same principles in the training programs that I've built. And I tell people right off the bat, if you just want to lecture, you should not hire me. You should not hire anyone. You can watch a YouTube video. Because a lecture, when you put people through a lecture, that's not going to be sticky. But here's what is sticky. when people are actually able to crystallize what they learned into their current role, into their current process, and then you give them an action plan on what to work on. So what I do is I'll walk through the theory of why this works, how it's different from other assessments. And the beauty of this assessment compared to others, Jane, is that it's actually very individualized. For instance, when you do the assessment, no one else is going to have the same report as you.
Yeah.
Literally, there's only like a 1 in 33.4 million chance that someone would have the same top five as you. And your report, your report actually gives you action items to work on. And then in any workshop, I dive into that a bit further and everybody will create what I call a gap, a growth action plan. And it outlines what is something that you'd like to work on. What is the strength of yours that you're learning about for the first time and how are you going to leverage it in your role? And on the flip side, there's something we call blind spots. With great power comes great responsibility. There's always a flip side to every single strength. And it's actually the blind spot that can get in the way of your success. If we think about that example I just gave, the activator strength, what do you think the blind spot of acting too fast and too quickly would be?
Not thinking through thoroughly enough, right? Consequences. Yeah.
Exactly, exactly. And so when people learn about their blind spots, they're actually able to create some sort of action plan to dial it down or better recognize it, which is how to tame it. And I'll give people a few examples. So that's number one, is giving the individual a growth action plan to work on. And then the second thing that's really important is actually operationalizing this into the team's existing processes.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, like you said, things just go back to normal the next day.
Yes.
So instead of leaving it as is, I will actually ask that team to brainstorm ideas of, now knowing this framework, now knowing how you as a team are scoped, like what you're highly indexed on. So for instance, some teams will be highly indexed on executing and they're really good at executing, then maybe they're lacking some of the more relationship building strengths. Conversely, some teams are really good at strategic thinking, but they're not as highly indexed on executing. When they learn this about the team, they're able to actually identify, oh, this is why we're stuck, or this is why we're having challenges with X project. And I'll ask them to come up with ways of how they can incorporate what they learned into what they're doing now. And some teams will say things like, let's review this at every team meeting, or let's build this into our OKRs, or at a bare minimum, let's use this in our performance reviews. So you think of ways of how to incorporate it into existing processes. I can come in and I can tell you what to do, but that doesn't really work. Because I can give you a list of 10 things, but if you're not actually thinking about how this will be realistically sustained in the team, it doesn't stick.
Yeah. Oh, that's so true. And it probably helps you identify if there's a big project happening or a big initiative that's like all hands on deck, who should take on what role based on their strengths and where each person fits in and get alignment there.
That's right. That's exactly right. And you can also think about risks. Given the makeup of our team, we may not have a lot of relationship building strengths. So what do we want to do to compensate for that in this upcoming product launch or project?
I'm curious for timeline for when people should take the Clifton Strengths Assessment. Probably it's everybody whenever you can, but as an overview. But do you recommend people take it as job seekers for knowing when they should, if they're feeling like they're not in the right place, not loving where they are or what they're doing, to identify what they should go into? And B, like you were just saying, like how to work with your team and how to probably be a better leader. And like where does it make sense or not make sense to take this assessment?
To your point, it always makes sense to do this assessment, but there are, I'd say, three specific, let's call them trigger points, that will cause somebody to want to take this assessment. Number one, you hit the mark, job seekers. I gave that example of how I did this assessment and I literally changed careers because of it. So I'd recommend any job seeker or somebody who's feeling that the role they're in just isn't really aligned to what either they're naturally good at or passionate about. Yeah. Number two, definitely anyone trying to level up as a manager or leader. Clifton Strengths actually has they have separate reports for people who are in management or leadership positions. And the report will specifically tell you, Jane, based on your strengths of ABC, here's how you can apply them to be a better leader. Here are the blind spots that you really have to look out for as a leader. And so anyone, yes, managing, leading a team, and who's trying to get their teams to speak the same language and just work like 1% better together. I read this stat that we spend about 1/3 of our lives at work, and we're probably working with other people. And so if there's anything you can do to make that easier on yourself and on the team, why wouldn't you do this? And then the third reason why somebody would do this is actually if you're looking to excel specifically in your role. An example of this would be, this is really popular with sales teams, and you know how a B2B sales team is structured, right? You have a handful of SDRs who all have the same role. They literally all have the same role. This is why it's really interesting on a sales team, but everyone has a unique personality. So how Jane sells will be different than how I sell, but I'm not quite sure. I don't have the right vocabulary. When every SDR does this assessment, the manager can then see, oh, Jane is really good at being strategic and analytical. I'm really great at wooing people. I'm making this up because you haven't done this yet. So the manager would coach you on how you can do that to meet your goals. And then maybe for me, I might not be as strategic or good with wooing people. I might be really high in learning strength and empathy and intellection. So then I would be a really good SDR by leaning into my strengths. So those are the three trigger points at which I see people do this type of assessment.
I love that. For leaders or anyone in a management position where you're overseeing a team or people, does the assessment align you to your team? So let's say it's Jane overseeing Bob, Mary, and Alice, right? Does it say, Jane, you should work with Alice this way, you should work with Bob this way? Does it match you up based on everybody's assessment too?
There is a separate resource for that specifically for managers. And I'm happy to share that with you. Yes. So it will, it's explained to you, Jane, if you're managing somebody who's high in activator, here's how you should manage them. If you're managing somebody who's not as good as activator and they're a bit more thoughtful and they might be a bit slower, here's how you can motivate them a bit more. Yes, it does tell you that. It's good for management, as you can see.
Yeah. It feels, I'm big on, with companies, always investing in your team's growth, right? Education, be that for marketing teams, if it's a new SEO course or whatever their specialty is, or something outside of what they're focused on. But I think this is a piece that's often overlooked. On marketing teams, we're so focused on skills that are marketing specific and not so much on the management side and people management, which ends up being so much more of my time, especially as I've grown in my career, like at the VP level. More than 50% of my time is managing people. So that's such a skill that you're really never taught. And you're taught through mentors and learning and going through experiences yourself. But something like this sounds really great for new managers and for existing like managers to grow and check yourself. And there's always things that we can learn that we don't know, but especially new managers, I feel like to give them that confidence to know what they're doing and how they're working with people.
That's right. That's absolutely right, Jane. Because, and AI is the buzzword of the moment, right? You can think of this almost like, I had a client say, this is like predictive AI for people.
I love that. And that's so true.
It really is, because you'll have your one-on-ones, you'll have your agenda for the one-on-ones with everyone. Everyone has their tasks. Everybody knows what they're doing on the racy. Everybody has the same OKR, but how you motivate people will be different based on how individually they are and also how you are as a manager. Mm-hmm. So it can be, it's a cheat sheet essentially to make the management a bit easier, because managers are so busy, busy and often not set up for success all the time, like you said.
So true. There's always a million things to do. So to pause on that and take time to learn and be a better manager, you have to be super cognizant of making that time and carving it out.
That's right.
I wonder, I love that you took this early in your career, this assessment, and it stuck with you to the point where you had your clients take it And then it was a recurring theme. It was just destiny, it seems like, that you were meant to be a coach for this, right? Like it just, it had this made this impression on your life.
Wow. I never thought about it that way, but you're making me feel really confident in this. You're right. The first time I took it, it changed me as an individual. I didn't know how to apply it as a manager yet. It wasn't until I started working with other people, managing a team, working with clients. And I was lucky that some clients were totally okay to do this. They thought it was fun. And it's only now, having experienced firsthand what it's like working with different teams as a marketing leader, everybody has so many different personalities. Yes. Everybody, no two people you manage is ever going to be the same. And the manager has so much responsibility. Like you said, this is not just for managing down. This is also for managing up. This is for managing across with your peers who are at the same level.
Yep.
It has benefited me in so many ways.
I need to learn so much more about this. And sneak peek for everybody, I'm going to take this assessment. And Alice is going to, we're going to make another bonus episode recording going over the results. So I'll be super vulnerable and all on the table is totally fine. But I'd love to record and see how this goes, and we'll do it live and see what everyone gains from it. So thank you for that, Alice. It'll be great.
Yes.
One thing that I'm glad you mentioned that, the managing up piece, because I do think that's something I still struggle with and would love to improve on. I mean, you could always improve on managing every which way, right? Mm-hmm. Yourself even. Yeah. So I'm very excited for that piece. I'm also curious if we can backtrack a little bit and get back to your squiggly career. I love that term. I'm curious if you have any advice for people or anyone who listening who either is in the middle of their squiggly career and they feel you on that term, or who is just looking for a pivot. I know since the pandemic, especially, people are very, so I'm curious, since you were able to pivot a few times, if you have any advice for people looking to do the same or in the middle of a pivot right now.
Yes, great question. Let's break this into two camps. So the first one is the self-reflection. I want everyone to do like radical, deep self-assessment about, what do I actually enjoy doing? If you think back through all of your jobs, there are going to be certain things that you remember just gave you this thrill.
Yeah.
Whether it was talking to somebody, creating a strategy, fixing a really hard problem. Really do that inventory for yourself. What am I actually passionate about? What energizes me? And then let's flip the script. And then I want everyone to do an inventory on, well, what really drains me? Mm-hmm. What just gave me so little energy after that I had to go lie on the floor for 10 minutes? Because I have done that. I've literally just lied on the floor, having to rejuvenate myself. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Isn't there a word for that too? I think it's only if you're outside, grounding, right? And you like put, some people do it just their bare feet on the grass, right? Grounding. But I think the extra grounding if you just full on lay down.
Yeah. I'm going to use that term now. It sounds a lot better than just lying on the floor trying to recuperate. So you're going to have this, you're going to have this inventory, right? Of things that excite you, things that energize you, and the things that drain you. And when you look through it, does that align with what you're doing now? And if it doesn't, what are the things that you can do more of that energize you? So you have your self-assessment. The number two, you can go do research, talk to friends, talk to family, talk to colleagues, talk to former colleagues, reach out to people that you see on LinkedIn who've written thought articles. Just do your research into coming out with maybe 3 to 5 possible new directions for yourself. And then the second camp that I talked about is, okay, now let's put things into action, because you've had the time to self-assess. What excites you? You don't want to do, you have an idea of what you want to try, then go try it. So I gave that example of, I think we called it moonlighting back in the day, and now we call it a side hustle, right?
Yeah.
I stayed in my full-time role while experimenting with other things. And we're marketers, so we understand this concept of experimentation. I want everybody to experiment on themselves. And we know how to talk about marketing sprints. Yes? Okay, yes. We're going to do this sprint for the next 30 to 60 days. What if you could do a sprint on yourself? Is there something that you can explore that would give you more data to know with greater clarity that this is definitely the direction I should pivot in? This can be role-wise, it can be company-wide, just something you can do to give you that additional confidence to take a few steps forward in a new direction.
Yeah.
Because if we don't try, we actually don't know. I've worked with somebody who always said, I want to do this. I really want to do this. And I asked them, how do you know? Have you actually done it? Because maybe when you do it, you're not going to like it.
Yeah. It's the idea of something versus the reality.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Get that data, experiment on yourself.
I love that. And we need to coin a term for this, right? Like a self sprint but a sprint on yourself, like a personal sprint.
Yeah.
So I love that. I was going to ask you about your side hustle too. And how you recommend somebody starting a side hustle. Because sometimes people jump in and they go, okay, I'm going to switch careers. I'm quitting this job. Nothing lined up. I'm going to try out getting into this career, a totally different path, and teach their own. I'm not saying that's a bad move. But from your experience, it seems, okay, stick with where you are for now, unless it's not a good space for you.
Yes.
Yeah. But test. And I love the idea of the personal sprints. So you test the waters, see if it is for you, collect the data as we are in marketers. Like that's our language. And then see if we like it. I love that idea. Mm-hmm. Cause then you're feeling it out, feel out different things and see what works, what fits you.
I'll give you an example of my sprint, actually, now that we have a term for it, my personal sprint. When I started doing these workshops for free, you know, I was still full-time director of marketing comms. And I thought to myself, how will I know that I actually have legitimate product market fit? What if this is just a thing that's a fad? And I said to myself, okay, my sprint is going to be, if I can get 3 paid workshops that fall into a certain range of compensation, that will be my sign. And are you familiar with Annie Duke?
The name sounds familiar, but who is she?
So Annie Duke she's a former professional poker champion, and she is known as a decision-making expert. And at a lot of the startups I've worked at, they use a lot of the methodology. And so this methodology of hers is called making bets. When you think about all the decisions you've made in your life, everything, work decision, relationship decision, you're making a bet that something is going to happen. Yeah. Example, I'm making a bet that when I take this job, I'm going to love it and I'll stay here for 3 to 5 years.
Yep.
I'm making a bet when I get married to someone that this will be my life partner. You're making a bet, but we never know with certainty, right? So I started using this kind of methodology on myself, and that was the bet I then made. So I managed to get the 3 paid workshops in a certain range. And then my bet was, okay, if I can drum up X amount of leads, and if I can make this amount of money in 1 year, then I will move forward with this. That was the bet I made. So I always knew what I was experimenting with. And so this helped me for 2 reasons. I had a very clear, tangible goal. And number 2, I always knew it was a bet. So I didn't go all in thinking, that's it. I'm never going to do anything else again. I knew there was always a chance to repivot or reiterate into something else.
Yes.
So I encourage people to think about the bets they want to make on their side hustles.
It's so interesting because I think, I don't know if it's human nature and just the way we tend to think initially, but when we think of making a big decision, right? We're like, oh, this is such a big decision. What if it's wrong? And you get this anxiety, right, attached to it, whether it's a career pivot or you're moving locations and states or getting married, right? Ah, this huge decision. Almost all decisions you can change again. So whatever path you go down, amazing. It'll be a journey. You learn from it. Maybe it continues and you keep going down that path the rest of your life. Awesome. But chances are there's going to be many like pivots around the way, like along the way, and you're going to change direction and courses, and you have to, like, nothing is permanent. You want to move to New York? awesome. You can always move somewhere else if you don't like it. There's nothing is permanent and you can always pivot. I think pivot is my new favorite word. I've said it like 50 times in this podcast.
Jane, did you know my marketing agency was called Pivot Six?
Ah, how cool.
Yes.
I love that. So it's a big word for you. Do you have it tattooed anywhere?
Oh, no, but now you're giving me ideas.
Right? Thank you. Cute little wrist tattoo.
Exactly. And you're absolutely right. And this is why knowing the data that you're measuring yourself against, yeah. I find really helpful when you're evaluating either a career pivot or launching a side hustle and knowing when to go into that all in full time. Yeah. And I've danced in and out. So I like to say I've danced in and out of working for myself, going back into a company. And that was an intentional move because of the work I do with teams, specifically in very specific environments, startups, new managers. I wanted to be on the ground and really know the challenges firsthand. I wanted to be in the weeds. And so that actually helped me become a more efficient and effective consultant by being able to dance in and out of the weeds of working full-time and then working full-time for myself.
I love that. I think this is such a good conversation to have right now because so many marketers are deciding between staying full-time or going into this fractional world, which is so interesting. And I love that you had your clients take the test too. So any fractionals listening, consider this to see if it's a fit and how you can work best with each other too. When you were first starting out coaching and when you made this goal and you said, okay, I need to hit this target by end of year one, was that when you were going in full-time or while you were working full-time or when you pivoted to coaching full-time?
That was the second. Yes. The latter. Okay. So the first experiment and sprint I ran on myself was if I can get 3 paid coaching and training workshops that are in the range of this, I will quit my job.
Then you'll go full time.
And then I did.
Yeah.
Okay. So that sprint was over. And then I needed to have a second kind of sprint or experiment. And so the second sprint was I would like to have this many leads and inquiries by this date. Otherwise, I might entertain going back full time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And it all depends on you personally, right? Like what your goals are, what you need, and what's important to you, what balance you're looking for. And if you don't hit what you're looking for and what you want for your life, then you can always go back to something else or change directions forward.
That's right. And a lot of people think that once you start your own business, you go all in on your side hustle, or maybe some of you have started fractional consulting. Some of you might think that going back to full time is a reflection of your success, like whether you were able to make it on your own. I don't see it that way. And I think it is because I've had such a squiggly career. I think that going in and out of consulting and full time work makes you a much better candidate in both realms. And I'll give you an example. As a fractional consultant, you're consulting, but you're never fully in the weeds long enough. It might be out of your scope of work, right? You might not be as involved in certain things as you want to be. So then when you go back into full time and you're able to do groundwork again, you become a better consultant. And then when you go back into full time, you've had such a breadth of experience with different clients, you become a better full-time team member. So this is what I mean by the squiggliness. It's actually okay. And it can make you a much better and competitive candidate in both realms.
Yes. And it all helps you grow regardless of what avenue you're in. It all helps you grow and bring more value to whatever company you're at, your own or for a separate company.
Exactly.
It's interesting. It makes me think, so I have a 4-year-old and I think growth spurts because I swear every day I wake up, he wakes up and I'm like, you grew again. It's crazy. Stop it. But I know we're saying sprints, but it's like sprints and growth spurts also with each of these experiences, right? You grow so much and learn so much from each pivot.
I love that. You're so creative with coming up with these terms, these like nouns for things. Ideation must be one of your strengths. Yeah, ideation.
I'm so excited to take this assessment with you and see what it is. Because I wonder, do you often get clients or anyone going through these assessments with you that are surprised by their results, or are they typically, yep, that's me?
I'd say 90% of the time, people say, yep, that's me. And then the 10% of the time will be people surprised because they did not know something was a strength. They never knew that this was a skill set that was valued.
Cool.
An example of this would be, there is a strength that they've identified. It's called input. And the strength of input is the ability to absorb a lot of information quickly and retain it.
Ooh.
And folks who I've coached will say, what? How is this a strength? Yeah. I had no idea that this was something valuable that I added as an employee or a manager.
Yeah.
So that's where they're usually surprised, is that they're just not, they didn't know that something they did so naturally was considered a strength and something that other people didn't have.
Very cool. So everybody, it also gives you new words and strengths to add to your resume and your LinkedIn profile. I love that. Are you, whenever you, I think the answer is yes, because you pointed out a few things for me, which I love. When you speak with people, are you constantly like thinking, okay, this is like a strength, this is a strength? And is that just natural for you now?
It's a blessing and a curse for people that I work with. Jane, it is a blessing and a curse. I will lie. I have worked on teams and some people have said to me, well, thanks to Alice, I can't be in a meeting anymore without thinking about everyone's strengths. So I've gotten that. And I pull it out when it's helpful.
Yeah.
I'm aware that, hey, you know what? This is not the only assessment. There are a lot of other ones that also add value and will give you that deeper sense of self-awareness. It's the one that has helped me the most. And so to answer your question, yes, it's in my mind. I'm mindful of when I verbalize things.
Yeah. Yeah. So funny. I always wonder that too with therapists of all kinds, right? If they're walking around diagnosing that person.
Probably.
Yeah. Alice, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. It's been so great having you, and I cannot wait for the assessment. So everybody stay tuned. We will record the assessment. It'll be live, but I won't share it live, but we'll share this and so everyone can see what the assessment actually is like, and I'll share mine with you. So looking forward to it, Alice. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane, for being very open to learning about it.
Oh, I love this stuff. This is so, I think we should focus a lot on marketing on this show, as we should. Mm-hmm. It's all for B2B marketers, but the leadership piece is so important for marketers, whether, like you said, leading with your peers, yourself, or underneath you. There's just so many ways to grow, and that management piece is really key to focus on too. So this is exciting. Thank you for chatting with us and sharing your squiggly career. That's also really cool to learn from. So thank you.
We need to normalize more squiggly careers.
Yes. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you. And thank you everybody for listening today. I'll let you know as soon as we have the bonus episode scheduled so you can tune in. I'll also link it in show notes as soon as it's live. So if you like the show, you like the episode, share with a friend, rate, review. Remember, reviews mean more eyeballs, more ears for us. So share the love. We appreciate it. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks.